Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's National Comics USA Today. Dan Walker making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Dan Walker, let's start with the big story for the past 24 hours in sports. Baker Mayfield's debut. He was 17 to 23 passing, 201 yards. Caught a touchdown pass. Got the highest grade ever from Pro Football Focus for a quarterback in his debut. What'd you make of Baker Mayfield last night?
Well, I think you left out the most important thing he did, which is he got me to stay up for the second half of that stupid game last night. I was ready to go to bed.
Isn't it wild? Because that game went from, like, I don't know why I'm watching this, to there is nothing else I would want to be watching right now other than Baker Mayfield play quarterback.
Oh, 100%. Like, I was bailing on it, ready to go to bed, whatever, get up early. And then, yeah, just he comes in the game, and it's like, well, you better stick around for the second half because something is going to happen. He is either going to do exactly what he did, or he's going to throw five interceptions and everyone's going to freak out about why the Browns picked him. And I'm glad it was the former instead of the latter because I think that's a lot more fun. And I don't know what it will lead to for the rest of this year, this month, or the rest of his career. But for one night at least, people who enjoyed watching Baker Mayfield when he was at Oklahoma had to enjoy watching the Cleveland Browns, which is maybe the first time anyone's ever said that.
And it makes you wonder, like, why did he start that game and the game before and the game before? And the only explanation I can come up with, because I don't know that there could be a way you could watch these two quarterbacks every day in practice and conclude that Taylor gives you a better shot to win than Mayfield. He just makes throws that Tyrod Taylor can't make. And if you subscribe to that, then the only explanation is that Cleveland is one of those franchises that believes you can get better by watching, that you'll be better off if you just watch. And I read a column at The Ringer earlier today. I don't want to take credit for this because I'm using a lot of the information that was in there. But one of the points in that column that the author makes is we don't do this with any other position in any other sport. That we conclude that watching makes you better or you'll be better off for watching. And there's really no evidence that suggests that it's actually true. Like, some guys who watch turn out to be great. Some guys who watch turn out to be bad. Some guys who start immediately turn out to be great. Some guys who start immediately turn out to be bad. Why is that a thing with quarterbacks in the NFL?
Yeah, it's just gut feeling. And I think the only thing that could maybe be comparable is point guards in the NBA. And they come in at 18, 19. And I think there's always this thought with NBA teams that, especially with point guards more than any other position, because they have the ball in their hands so much of the time, like, you need to have a veteran there in case the other guy struggles, because it could become a confidence issue, right? And I think probably the same logic applies to the quarterback position, because the game moves so fast. And that's the big difference in why so many guys who are great college quarterbacks don't succeed in the NFL, because the game just moves so much faster, and playing that position is all about being able to read what you see on the field and anticipate what's going to happen so that you put the ball in the right place. And there are some guys who are really good at it and some guys who are not, and it's why evaluating quarterbacks is so hard. And so you bring them into the league and you see them in practice, but the game is just so different what actually happens when everyone's playing full speed all the time. And I just think people are scared. And it's just a gut feeling. That you're right. There is no rhyme or reason to how to handle a quarterback or any sort of pathway or blueprint that guarantees you anything. But it's just gut feeling, and clearly that's the way they felt. But ultimately, look, I mean, he gets in now, three games in. We'll see what happens. But I don't expect that we'll see much of Tyrod Taylor going forward.
Talking to Dan Walken from USA Today's on Twitter, at Dan Walken. You mentioned putting the ball where it's supposed to go. Somebody who didn't do that last night, Sam Darnold, two interceptions. He can obviously make all the throws, but several times last night. He just threw the ball somewhere he shouldn't be throwing the ball. Was that an issue for him at USC as well?
Sure, he made a lot of mistakes. Absolutely, he made a lot. Had a lot of interceptions, careless turnovers. He was one of those guys who was known to take a lot of chances, and you know maybe he did that at USC because, as we see now, there are a lot of deficiencies at USC that you have to maybe overcompensate for, and that maybe led him to throw some of those interceptions. But that's a habit you've got to get out of at the NFL level. You can't take a lot of those crazy risks, or else defensively teams are too good and they're going to pick you off way too much of the time.
Talking to Dan Wolkin from USA Today, I want to switch to college football. Paul Feinbaum created a headline yesterday, I believe, on a podcast when he said the end is sooner rather than later for Nick Saban. I mean, he's 68 years old, so, you know, he's closer to the end of his career than he is to the beginning. That's obvious. But I didn't get the sense that, like, Nick is, like, getting ready to walk away because, like, why would you? You're on top of the world. Where, like, do you think Nick Saban is within a couple of years or 3 years of retiring?
I think that's probably, I think that's like the possibility, you know, maybe 3 years after this one. So, 1920, you know, maybe somewhere around that 2021, area where he's 70, 71 years old. Look, it was already last year impacting Alabama on the recruiting trail. The whole Nick Saban is not going to be here that much longer. He's getting old. It absolutely had an impact on Alabama in recruiting. And that's why Nick Saban kind of got rid of a lot of his older staff members and brought in a bunch of young guys. Like, that's really been kind of the big background story on Alabama this year, is a bunch of guys came from smaller programs in their 30s, replacing a lot of the guys who had been with him for a number of years who were in their 50s and 60s. And that was very much a recruiting play. And, you know, but once you get past 70, like, you can only stave it off for so long. And so, you know, so you're not 70 years old and recruiting kids. Like, can they really believe that you're going to be there when you're 75, you know, or 76, or 77? Like, at some point, that just does become too much, and they will slip. So, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to say three more years, like, that's a number that would make sense to me.
It's funny. We're doing this series, CBS Sports, on the six programs being led by Naismith Memorial Hall of Famers, and obviously the six programs with the coaches there, they're all older coaches. Bill Self's only 55, John Calipari's 59, but Roy Williams is 68, Jim Boeheim's 73, Mike Krzyzewski, I believe, is right around, he's in there somewhere. And as I'm trying to project, like, how long these guys might really do it, one of the things I found, and it's not like I discovered it, it's just something that I noted. A whole bunch of guys coach to 70. Like, that's not a hard number to hit if you're great at your job. Literally nobody gets to 75. History of college basketball. John Chaney's the oldest Division I basketball coach ever. He went to 74. Now, Boeheim's going to go to 75 because his son just enrolled there. But there seems to be a massive difference between 70 and 75 for whatever reason.
Well, I mean, 75 is not young,
no.
Right? I mean, that's like 8 years past, you know, national retirement age. And, look, I know a lot of these guys want to hang on for a long time if you're happy and successful and doing well. But also, like, at some point, you know, you have to start doing the math and say, okay, I've only got so many years left, more than likely. I mean, do I literally want to do this until I die?
Right.
And I think that's, you know, I think that's something that normal people, most normal people, would not want to do. Like, take some time and, you know, go see the world. Go, you know, be with your grandkids. Like, do something. Now, you know, Jim Boeheim, like you said, is the exception. Jim Boeheim is a guy who, like, literally would rather be in Syracuse, New York, than anywhere else in the world.
Right.
He can play. I remember back in the Olympics, you know, he's complaining about everything. Like, complained about, they went to Barcelona to play, like, an exhibition game before the London Olympics, and I remember he wrote this blog about how he didn't like Barcelona because it was a big seafood city or something. Like, I mean, like
Barcelona, I know you've been there. I've been there as well. It is one of the most amazing cities in the world, and Syracuse, like, with all due respect, is just gray.
Yeah.
It's just gray nonstop. Like, the idea that you would love Syracuse more than Barcelona is insane, except Jim Boeheim absolutely does.
Right, so he's the exception, right? So he may literally just like coach until he's at death's door. That would not, you know, I mean, Bill Snyder is kind of doing the same thing right now at Kansas State, and not with great results, at least early in the season. But yeah, like I do think at some point you just kind of have to tell yourself, all right, I got to spend, you know, my sunset years like doing something other than, you know, sitting in living rooms of 16 and a half year olds begging them to come play for me.
I'm talking to Dan Walken here from USA Today. Arkansas, 1-2 at Auburn tomorrow, 29.5 point underdogs, which is a massive number between two SEC teams when one of them's not Alabama. Are we, and I talked about this early in the week, are we sure Chad Morris is a good football coach? Because he's got a great reputation, but he's never been great.
Well, I think he's a good football coach. You know, you looked at SMU, he inherited, I mean, literally a situation about as bad as what Joseph Fuente inherited at Memphis. And it took some time. I think his defensive coordinator hire at SMU was questionable. And I think his defensive coordinator at Arkansas that he hired is questionable. I mean, John Chavis, the perception within the industry is that he's kind of over the hill. You know, that the game has maybe passed him by. He can't really defend a spread offense. That's something you have to do as a defensive coordinator now in college football. So that, I think, will dog him a little bit as this thing goes forward if he doesn't turn it around. I think Chad Morris is a good coach. It was a tough year to hire a coach for anybody, especially if you're Arkansas. I mean, you see across the board in that coaching carousel last year, just because of how many big-time jobs were open, you saw programs maybe hire less accomplished coaches than they would otherwise in a average year. I think that was true at Florida State. That was true at Tennessee. I mean, you can just go down the line. If it wasn't going to be Chad Morris, who's it going to be? And that, you know, so I understand what you're saying, but he's who they've got. He's done some good things in recruiting. Now the big challenge for them is if they continue to go down this path and lose, are they going to be able to keep that momentum on the recruiting trail and get the kind of players he needs to go in there and win?
Wrapping up here with Dan Walken, USA Today. Last thing before I let you go, in about an hour and a half, they're going to kick off down in Orlando, Florida Atlantic against 16th-ranked UCF. So it's a nationally ranked team against Lane Kiffin, so that's good enough for television. Is it a competitive game tonight, or UCF just run away from them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw that line. I think it's like 13.5, right? And I think it seems like everybody is going to be on UCF from a gambling perspective. I mean, it's one of those lines that almost seems too easy. Florida Atlantic has not been very good this year. I mean, their defense has been terrible. Offensively, they don't look like they have quite as much pop as they did when Kendall Briles was calling the plays last year. And UCF's pretty good. Now, you know, they've only, unfortunately, because of last weekend getting wiped out by the hurricane, you know, they haven't maybe had as many reps, haven't had as much game experience. So I don't know. I mean, I could see FAU covering. But just on paper, it sure looks like UCF's the much better team.
That is Dan Walken from USA Today. You can read him, usatoday.com. Find him on Twitter, at Dan Walken. Thanks, buddy. Have a good weekend.
See you, Gary.
I'll see you. That's Dan Walken, USA Today. Florida Atlantic right now, 2-1, but have beaten nobody, unless you count Air Force as somebody. Lost their opener at Oklahoma, 63-14, so got completely run off the field. And the only other time this season that they played a ranked team. So we'll see what they do tonight against UCF. That's in Orlando. If you want to watch Lane Kiffin coach against a future Memphis opponent, 6 o'clock ESPN. We come back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.